From the Moen Broadcast Center, this is Take Two. I'm Amy Martinez.
And I'm Alex Cohen. Thanks for joining us. Today was set to be the big day. Apple facing off against the FBI in a dramatic showdown over encryption. Well, so much for that. Yesterday, a judge decided to postpone the hearing after the Justice Department revealed it might no longer need Apple's help opening the iPhone used by a gunman in the San Bernardino shooting. Whether that particular iPhone will be cracked remains to be seen. But meanwhile, a group of students at Johns Hopkins University recently discovered another way to hack into Apple's messaging service. Gabriel Kapchuk is one of those students, and he joins us now on the line. Gabriel, welcome to Take Two.
Thank you so much for having me.
As I understand it, you are getting your PhD in computer science, correct?
That's correct. I just started this past year.
Congratulations. I would imagine that a big part of your research looks into things like how you build tech products and how you code and things like that. But I would also imagine these days it's pretty valuable to know how to crack code as well. How did you and your colleagues start looking into Apple's iMessage service and seeing that it might be vulnerable?
So Apple's iMessage is actually a really important thing in the security community. Before iMessage was introduced in 2011, pretty much all text message traffic was just that. It was over SMS. There was little to no security on it. And even today, SMS has really not very much security. In one fell swoop, Apple introduced end-to-end secure connections for people's messaging systems. And suddenly millions of people were able to communicate in a rigorously secure way. So it made a lot of sense to look at that. Back in April, my advisor, Matt Green, he sort of was looking over the protocol, seeing exactly how iMessage worked, and a couple of things stuck out at him as kind of strange. And so he sort of raised a little flag to Apple and says, maybe you guys should take a look at this. We sort of tabled that until the end of the summer when we sat down together as a team and worked through and found some actually exploitable problems in the way that they were doing their encryption.
And I want to talk about those exploitable problems, but back for a moment, just so that listeners can get a real sense of this. What is kind of the difference between, as Apple was touting it, why was their iMessage service so much better than the standard SMS that everyone else was using?
So SMSs, when they get transmitted from your phone, they actually carry over the waves in an encrypted state that's really not that impressive. It's pretty minimal security. And then actually when it hits a tower, it's decrypted completely and it's transmitted decrypted. That's not very good security, although for most people, it'll protect you enough. For a sophisticated attacker, that's not very much. Apple's encryption system in iMessage is actually encrypted the entire way through. And Apple has claimed in the past that even they can't read your messages when they pass through their servers.
So you and your classmates, your professor, kind of realized, okay, this messaging system might not be as secure as Apple thinks it is. So in layman's terms, because I know this is tricky stuff, what did you guys do to try to break into the system?
Yeah, I mean, the attack itself is a little bit tricky, and I suggest anybody who wants to sort of dig a little bit deeper, go read our blog post. But what we were able to do is we were able to actually capture image and video and document files that you send over iMessage. And we call those attachment messages is really the way we think of them. And those are transmitted a little bit differently. And we were able to find a way to actually attack those messages and actually decrypt the hidden information. And so essentially, if we were on the network of somebody who's receiving that message, we would be able to decrypt it and see the picture.
How long did it take you to do this, Gabriel? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how hard would you say it was to do?
Well, the attack itself takes about 72 hours to run right now. We're working on some optimizations to get that a little bit faster. We started working and building systems towards the end of summer, and then about middle of November, we disclosed to Apple that we had actually found this attack, and they started working with us to fix their systems and build a patch. In terms of a 1 to 10 scale, well, we're pulling a lot of primaries, a lot of basic techniques that we already know about in the security community together. That said, anything in computer science, especially in security, is really tricky. So I don't think I'd give any project less than a 6. I think I'd give us about a 7.
All right. Now, just to be clear here, I want listeners to understand this is not what you guys did is not the same sort of thing that the FBI has been looking to do in the case of this one particular iPhone used by the San Bernardino shooter. But in terms of the information that you were able to access and you were able to break into, give us a sense of what could someone do with information. I mean, I'm thinking about how I use my iMessage. You know, I'm texting to my husband that I picked up my kid and I'm on the way home. I don't think that anybody really cares about about this information, but right. how important could it be?
Well, I mean, to sort of give an upper bound on the level of importance, people send each other legal documents over iMessage from time to time. I mean, it is
really?
Better than just sending it in an email a lot because emails tend to not be encrypted. iMessage had this end-to-end encryption thing. I'm not suggesting that you should send legal documents over iMessage, certainly not anymore. But right. people were doing this kind of thing. I mean, there's sort of the obvious one that I guess a lot of people were sort of pointing to in the media recently, you know, please don't send nude pictures of yourself over iMessage anymore because, you know, they might leak out. So that's sort of the easiest thing to think about attacking.
I am curious, when you figured out that you could do this, you guys notified Apple, right?
Absolutely.
What happened when you told them?
So I think it's pretty standard in the academic research community in security that when you find a bug like this, something exploitable, you really have to tell the people how to fix it. Because a lot of the times, you know, they need some assistance. Apple has one of the best cryptographic teams in the country. They're really, really good. But even they still managed to make this mistake. So we suggested to them a couple of quick fixes, which they could deploy, you know, in a couple of months. The details of those fixes is a little bit in depth and probably a little bit beyond the scope.
No. We don't need to go into that here.
Yeah,
but like,
no, don't worry.
What was their tone like? Was it, wow,
they were
okay,
actually really
this isn't
excited.
So good?
They were really
excited. They were excited.
Happy. Yeah. I mean, we got a little bit of pushback from time to time. You know, we are telling them that they did something that needs to get fixed and was broken. But
sure.
they wanted to work with us to really make sure that they were rolling out stuff, rolling out products that were secure. And so we were sort of engaging with them from November through December and January and stuff, really making sure they were doing and making the best choices that they can make.
And you said earlier that you're still working on this, looking for ways you could do this quicker and faster. Is this? It almost reminds me of those stories of the hackers that the banks hire to try to break into their banks to make sure that they're secure. Is that kind of the situation you've got going right now with Apple?
I mean, not quite. I mean, we're definitely separate entities. They're not hiring us to do this research. This is sort
sure.
of our own academic research. The stuff we're working on right now is sort of other applications of this kind of attack. A lot of the basic stuff that we're using might have applications on other target areas, stuff like that. We're working to speed up the attack to show that it's, you know, more feasible than 72 hours. But in the security community, once you break something, you know, it's broken. And any kind of attack that's even somewhat practical should be really scary. And so we're sort of working to make things a little bit faster. But for the most part, we're pretty happy with where we are.
Gabriel, I'm just going to mention it again. This is not the same sort of, you know, breaking in or cracking of the code
Correct.
that the FBI has been asking Apple to do. But that request has spurred this huge debate in this country right now over,
yeah.
you know, how safe are these products and how safe should they be and who should be allowed to break into them. With your work on this, I mean, I know you're kind of focusing more on the technical side, but where does that leave you on this debate? What is it? What kind of insight has it provided?
Yeah, I think this work has ended up being very timely in a really lucky way. A lot of the security community has very strong feelings on this issue, and for the most part, not that many people are listening to people in the security community, pretty ironically. What you can sort of take away from our attack is that when we talk about, you know, how do we build back doors, how do we let the good guys see it but not the bad guys see it, that whole conversation is sort of built on top of this basic assumption that encrypted systems work, right? That these systems are already impregnable, so we have to build these backdoors into them to let them happen. Well, we just showed that that's not true. I mean, iMessage for a very long time has been a target for law enforcement. They said, you know, this is a big problem for us, and we managed to find a way around that. So as we go forward with this debate, I think it's really important to remember, you know, every time you weaken a system even a little bit, you're going to introduce a lot bigger fault lines into the system than you could possibly imagine. And we want to make sure that, you know, if our voices lend anything to this conversation, it's really to say, let's not make it any harder for Apple to make their products secure.
Did you get an A in this class, Gabriel?
This is just research. This wasn't for a class, but hopefully in my boss's eyes, it's an A.
I give you an A. Gabriel Kavchuk is a PhD student at Johns Hopkins University. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.